The News and Talk of West Texas presents Isidro Gutierrez and the Did You Know Show on News Talk 790 KFYO. Isidro is a former Lubbock County Commissioner, and he brings a unique Hispanic conservative viewpoint to KFYO. Phone lines are open at 770-5790. Now, here's Isidro Gutierrez.
Well, here we are again. It's Sunday afternoon. Hello to all of you listeners in Lubbock and all over the South Plains of Texas. This is KFYO, and we reach a big chunk of the South Plains, all the way from Midland to Amarillo and eastern New Mexico all the way to Matador. So hello to all of you. As the guy on TV was saying here at the local TV station in Snyder, Texas. Oh, that's Snyder for us West Texans, but the TV stations will hire these guys from New York, and they look at the word Snyder on their screen and say, and we have beautiful sunny weather in Snyder, Texas. But however, today on the Did You Know Show, we have Representative Charles Perry here in the station with us, sitting across the desk from him. And I'm going to apologize to everybody in advance, because this may sound to you like the Charles Perry fan club today, and it's going to be somewhat like that. Charles, welcome to the Did You Know Show on Sunday here at KFYO.
Well, Cedro, it's great to be here, and I'm glad you're doing the show. You've got a perspective that people need to hear, and is fairly consistent with the values that we have out here in West Texas. And it's good to be here. It's good to be on this outlet.
I appreciate that. We are a unique Hispanic perspective here, because there aren't thousands of Hispanics that agree with what we say here, but because we are the only Hispanic voice on the radio. But there are thousands of Hispanics that share our values and are conservative, and they want to see their youngsters get a good education. They want to have a home. They want health care for their family. They want a job. They want to be able to provide for themselves. They do not want to be wards of the government. And so those are the types of values that are held high by West Texas folks. And we're going to talk about West Texas values.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And, that sounds like American values, actually.
So they do.
It doesn't really have to be designated to a specific group or demographics. I think we all want equal opportunity to have those values and not become ward of the state, and have someone that tells us how good that we should have it and keep us in those positions. So it's good that you're here. I really appreciate you. I have for years now watched you, and not being in the political cycle, if you will, 20 years ago, but I've had time now to see kind of what Isidro's about, and it's been good to see that.
So. Well, I appreciate that, Charles. Thank you. And it's like I said, we're going to have a Charles fan fest here today, Charles Perry, rather. One of the things, Charles, that was very interesting politically is that when people were talking about Governor Rick Perry, and they would use his last name Perry here in Lubbock, people would say, which Perry are you talking about? Are you talking about Charles or Rick? That was now you will not have to contend with that any longer, looks like.
Well, and I always laugh because he calls me cousin, but I think he calls everybody cousin. But, at the end of the day, there's 14 years of Rick Perry at the governor's role, and it's undeniable. The state that we're in today is directly attributed to his policies and him standing firm on some fiscal issues and doing some things that he needed to do. We are in a very much pro-life state, and that's not by accident. It requires strong convictions. We are a fiscally conservative state. That's not by accident. That's because of leadership at the state level. I tell everybody, we are blessed to have unlimited natural resources, or what perceived to be unlimited natural resources. It's one thing to have them. It's another thing to be good stewards of it, and put Texas on a path and keep Texas on that path of being fiscally strong, strong economy, jobs creation, jobs creators. So we may disagree on a policy or two along the way, but at the end of the day, I think history will bear out and view that 14 years is very, very positive
for the
state of Texas.
And as it turns out, you have a lot to do with preserving our agriculture, our energy, our education system through your position as state representative in Austin. One of the things that I always say when we talk about agriculture, cattle, oil, that also translates, without even saying it, into water. And so those are things that you have been able to work on during your second term in the House of Representatives. So let's go ahead and talk about some of the things that, you did. The very first thing I want to mention that happened in the legislature this year is some really good gun legislation, in my opinion. For example, Charles, I was always worried that that when I was carrying a concealed handgun, that the wind would blow my shirt and it would expose my my concealed weapon. And then somebody would say, oh, look, this man is armed. And that would create problems for me, but not anymore.
No, SB 299 removed the penalties associated with inadvertent disclosure. If it's just accidental or someone perceives that that's a gun in your pocket and they argue that that's no longer concealment, that you're not going to be hauled in and handcuffed and persecuted. So inadvertent disclosure was handled through SB 299, kind of same along lines. You know, we have legitimate CHL carriers that had passed the test and been trained, that were licensed, that had their guns, and when they would go on to university campuses, they were in a predicament because they're on the campus, but they're not carrying. They leave it in their vehicle. That is no longer going to be an offense.
That's right. That's
that.
That's one of the other laws. That's that
right.
Was passed.
So, you know, that was pretty much a no-brainer. That was SB 1907 that says if you drive onto a campus with a gun and you're a licensed CHL holder, you're not going to be punished or penalized or prosecuted over leaving it in your vehicle. One other, just kind of an overreaching SB 987 in our Second Amendment, it just says basically that federal laws or ordinances can't conflict with state laws when it comes to Second Amendment rights in the state. So if you've got a, and we had this happen in Travis County is a good example, down where the other non-Texans that live in the Texas borders in Austin live, we're trying to produce local ordinances that would conflict with state or federal law. And we just clarified that well, you can't do that.
Let me tell you why that's very good, why I love this, what you did, what the legislature did with gun laws. And that is because before this, law-abiding citizens could be felons.
Right.
But now they have this protection, and I think that's big. I used to go to lunch at the tech club, and I always had to stop and drop off my weapon somewhere. Because, you know, I was nervous about leaving my handgun in the car when I was having lunch. But see, now I don't have to worry about that anymore.
And then my direct contribution, was House Bill 1421 that I had passed. And that bill basically says the magistrates and municipalities that confiscate weapons are able to sell those to licensed gun holders. So if I'm a sharpshooter or a academy or somewhere and go to a public auction, I can, if say we've confiscated a couple of hundred weapons over the course of a few years and the sheriff's department wants to, right now the only way they do is destroy those, they can actually sell those to licensed gun dealers. It's a $500,000 fiscal note to the Department of Public Safety.
Well, if
had
I
that law yeah. been in effect. So,
based on all these things, if I had to grade you on conservative gun legislation, I'd have to give you an A+ in the legislature. We have a phone caller on the line. Let's visit with Beatrice and see what is on her mind this morning. Good morning, or afternoon, rather. Hello, are you there?
Yes.
Okay,
I am.
Great. Yes. What is your question for Charles?
Yes, sir. I had a question about what's happening in Syria. I know that our congressman has already told us that they have a chance to vote whether or not they're going to participate in any kind of military action in Syria. Does the House of Representatives have that same opportunity? And what would you vote? Would you vote yes to intervene or no to not intervene?
Yeah, and I'm going to answer that a little bit this way. I'm a state representative, so that issue won't become before me to vote. That's a federal issue. Now, I tell you, that is a hard issue for our country. I believe we have a moral and a righteous, justifiable position to protect those that are being killed innocently with sarin gas. At the same time, I don't believe, and again, I'm talking, this is Charles Perry, so I'm not a federal, but I do think you have to ask, are we positioned as a country because of our weakened military state, because of some of the policies and some of the places that we've we've just not shown who we were the last few years, and I'm afraid that if we were to go in there today under that state, that we'd lose a lot of our guys. We're not ready for a battle. Do we have an obligation to do it? I think ultimately at some level we do have some responsibility to protect those that are being persecuted innocently, and I think we can justify it. But today I don't think the states are ready to take that on. And I'm not going to be asked to vote on that because I'm a state legislator, but that's a hard call. But we need to move very close, cautiously. That could be a World War III event. It literally could ignite that.
I agree. Do you think that the Arab countries around that area should be the ones to be responsible for their neighbors' behavior instead of us all the way across the other side of the planet?
I think that's true, and I think that the key you got to remember, though, is, and we do this a lot, we lump people or individual lives under an umbrella of a label. So we have people that are literally getting killed through sarin gas and chemical warfare that are innocent people, no different than me and you sitting in Lubbock, Texas. A government has decided that we're not worthy of life and have taken us out. So those are the bigger issues of the day, but we cannot be the world's policeman, and definitely in the current state that we're in as a military and the way we've positioned ourselves over the last few years, I think we're in trouble if we take that on without some serious thinking, without support from around the world.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, no Beatrice, problem. For your phone call. And we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about education and what happened in Austin on this. Express your opinion on the Did You Know show. We've got Charles Perry, representative from this region, on here in the studio across the table from me. But we also have two phone calls on the waiting to visit with us. And we're going to go ahead and visit with our callers, and then we'll go on to talk about education and what happened in Austin on the subject of education. So let's talk to John. Good afternoon, my friend. How are you today?
Good afternoon, Isidro. Good to talk to you, sir. Say, I just wanted to, as you well know, since you, along with myself, are members of the Citywide Pride Committee, that when the IRS gave us the runaround on renewing our 501c3, that we contacted Representative Perry, and he gave us some good directions on it and actually helped us.
Okay, so this is your way of saying thank you to Representative Perry then.
Absolutely, yes, and we finally did get it renewed.
Well, I appreciate that, and I've got several of those pending that I think are directly related to that.
Yes, and you led us in the right direction, and we got it done finally. It still took several months, number of months, but we finally got it done.
I hear you.
Hey, John, I want to say something about your point.
Yes, sir.
Whenever I call Representative Perry for anything, I get a response back from him. I'm talking about double quick. How about you? Were you did you think you got double quick service from the
absolutely. And he doesn't just shove you off onto somebody else or tell you to take up a petition or something like that. He gets to it, and he gets it done.
Well, I'll tell you, we won the citywide. We got a citywide Pride Award Friday, in fact. It was under a different name of a company that I have, so it was nice to see that in action, too. So,
well, I'm a member of that board, by the way.
We got no weeds out front, so it served us well, but I appreciate the job you guys do.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you that. There are people with six-foot-tall weeds in the front yard right now here.
Well, we went rocks. We went zero landscape, and it does look good, but you guys recognized it, so thank you.
All righty. Well, we got Mike on the Mike is waiting on the line. John, thank you very much for your call.
Thank
you. Mike, what is your question for Representative Perry today?
Well, hello, Representative Perry and Cedro. I'm interested in finding a way to get the resources for education directly into the hands of parents instead of going through the state school boards. And I was wondering, I'm making an effort to start an amendment process so the state could do that. And I was wondering what Representative Perry thought of that and if he could support it in some way.
Great question. And we had a huge debate, and there's multiple things going on in our education funding right now. Let me address a couple of things on just kind of what we did in education, then we'll move into what you're talking about, which is probably a voucher initiative is somewhere you're at on that. But let's talk a little bit about education. If I had to name one thing I think this session did, was it hit head on some of the problems that have come up over two decades, basically 20, 30 years in the curriculum aspect. And we hit the curriculum aspect head on. We've made it a pathway for career tech. Prior to the HB5, a kiddo was pretty much limited to academic, higher ed, or not at all. So 30% of the kids in high school were in that mindset. 70% weren't. And although as admirable as a higher education path is, it just doesn't fit everybody. So at the end of the day, we put HB5 in, which give kids five different options. They're called endorsements. If you have an aptitude for arts and science, if you have an aptitude for liberal arts, if you had an aptitude for music, or if you have a specialty trades, master's plumber's license, those kind of things, we've put you on that path. So I think you're going to see our dropout rate go down. Your employers in the state are going to be excited, and kids are going to be able to make good incomes coming out of high school, possibly 1 to 2 years of community ed. So HB5 is transformational. I think we're going to look back 5 years from now and see the effects of what we've done in that. And the average age, I think, of master and electrician in Texas is right close to 60. So there are plenty of job opportunities. And I'm not suggesting every kid that goes down the path of an endorsement, something other than higher ed, has to stay in that. It came down to an Algebra 2 class. So you can get back in the higher academic class. But we just had put a system in place that wasn't giving kids options for where they wanted to be, and options and a need that's not being met in the state of Texas. We got people from moving in from all around the country filling jobs that our kids could have been taken had we been on this initiative. So,
hey, Charles, before you answer his question on choice, I want to say that I know a gentleman who went through the electrical endorsement course at Estacado High School and is doing very well
as
a master electrician.
Well, I was proud of the legislature because we undid about 30 years of stuff that I think all well-intended but just missed the mark. So I'll set HB5. I could talk forever. That's the one of the best things I think we got done, and we did some things on some accountability stuff. Let's talk about school choice. In Lubbock, Texas, we have private schools, charter schools, home schools, and public schools. So we already have a venue of four choices for parents to take into. We had several pieces of legislation, and actually in the TEA code today, there is legislation that is available to the local school boards. Yes. Can actually elect to be out from under TEA, if you will, and give parental control in there. It's called the Home Rule School, I believe is the caption. It's been in the code forever. The funding has gotten a little bit more, less mandated from the state in the sense that with HB5, we've removed some of the cost associated with our education. So the funding coming to the local will have a little more local control over it. How we get parents involved in that is to be involved in the local elections at your school boards, to be engaged in those school board meetings. The voucher discussion was up all session and, kind of fizzled out there about three quarters of the way through. Vouchers probably have a role in a urban setting or in a Houston setting, but it didn't get any legs across the state from the legislature because there wasn't a clear and definite and defined what a voucher program would look like. It doesn't work well in rural Texas because the options for non-public schools are limited. They're not out there other than the four choices that we have, and that's where parents are involved, and that's why it says, statistically speaking, there's not much difference in the performance when you get into charter schools versus public schools.
Well, we've got music in the background, so that means that we're going to go to break. So, Mike, I want to thank you very much for your phone call, and I hope that Charles answered your question, but we'll have time to discuss that more. We're going to ask David to hold on. Stay on hold. We're going to come back and we're going to talk more about education because there's also the question of C-Scope and Common Core. And I want to give my personal opinion about vouchers because, after all, I am the host. And this is Isidro Gutierrez on the Did You Know Show. And we're back from that break. And we're going to continue our visit with Representative Charles Perry. We're going to talk a little bit more about education, hopefully voter ID and redistricting, but we have a caller on the line. And David, welcome to the Did You Know Show. What is your question for Representative Perry?
Yeah, it's not quite related to education, but I was curious to know what can a voter do or what can the state do to start a constitutional amendment process that would limit the power of a locally owned utility company from just doing anything at once behind the scenes, like going after contracts, like building power plants that have not been authorized by the voters and that kind of thing. What can the voters do to start a constitutional process to protect themselves from an out-of-control utility board, a local utility board?
And I'm going to answer it without having a city charter or any of those kind of things in front of me. The city charter is typically held down, I believe, at the state capitol and the archives and things, but we don't micromanage those charters and things. But I think that if citizens got together and wanted to see some legislation on Public Utilities Commission, you know, those rates that come through, they're regulated by the PUC, depending on what type of energy group it is. So we do have some rate and safety issues there. But as far as being able to constitutionally restrict or not restrict a local authority or a local governing authority from doing something, it's probably going to require a pretty substantial process through the Secretary of State. Now, I just don't have the background to tell you exactly how to start doing that. I'm sure there is probably legislation, state statute. Legislation is probably the more appropriate venue to put things in place that would regulate that, and I'd be more than interested in hearing and looking at what you're trying to accomplish and see if it's already, one, exist, and you may not know about it, or two, if it doesn't exist, if a statute or a constitutional amendment is probably more appropriate. But I would say statutes are probably, because it's in the Energy Utility Commission. Railroad Commission actually does the gas pipeline, so you got two or three different agencies over those venues to start with. Now, power generation stations, you're going to have EPA, TCQ, all of those regulations for someone to meet, but just the ability for a local government to start that discussion or move down that row, they're probably going to require statute changes and not necessarily a constitutional amendment. So feel free to meet with me and get me in the loop on what you're trying to accomplish, and let's see what makes sense and where we could go from there.
Well, David, I can tell you by personal experience that Representative Perry will respond to your request real quick. He is known for that, and I personally vouch for that.
So okay, well,
I'm not trying to put you off, but that's that's just something I've just not got the familiarity with. And we try to stay out of the local stuff as much as possible, because the closer you are to the people that have to pay the tab, the better. So I just try to really protect not putting a state agency or a state legislature in the middle of a local issue. But at the same time, you know, they all bleed together, and we probably do have some jurisdiction.
That's good. Okay. One real quick last question. Do you foresee the election of 2016, where the Super Tuesday primary is going to have to be moved back beyond like April, May, and June, like it did this last election, or...
No, I think it, and the reason I'm going to say no is because we did get confirmation that the current maps that we have for redistricting, at least in Texas primaries, is going to be allowable. The ones that we passed, the courts upheld them last week and said pretty much they're used. So by not having a redistricting battle going on, I think you're going to set the primaries in 14, and I think you'll have the primaries in 16 follow through, unless something between now and 16 gets in there. But it was really the redistricting process that threw that into the chaos that it had. So I'm hoping that 14, I know 14's good, 16's going to stay the same. The maps, once they've been voted on twice, would be really hard and difficult to challenge, and I think that will keep us on a path to where primaries run normally.
David, okay. I want to thank you very much for your phone call. We're going to go ahead and transition. Great segue, David, to
thank
help
you.
Us to get into voter ID, which
okay.
is, Charles, now that the district lines are set, tell us about voter ID come November, which is only 10 weeks from now.
Well, voter ID's in. I mean, the Supreme Court said we're good, and we're rocking and rolling on that. And everybody you talk to, other than the political pundits out there with their two-second sound bites, and, you know, it seems like we have to create causes when there are no causes on this issue. But everybody that's common sense says it makes common sense to do that. So Texas has been approved to do that. Other states have been approved. So voter ID is being challenged by the Department of Justice at the federal level. But as we currently place, I think we're going to move through and voter ID is going to be part of the process.
But it's law right now. So all of you listeners out there, get your voter ID ready to vote in November. We got some amendments going to be on the ballot.
Yep. There's going to be 9 constitutional amendments in November.
Is there any one particular one that you think should is big for people here in West Texas?
They're all important or they wouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. Most of them are house cleaning, but there are a couple that are near and dear to my heart. One is the water initiative. We're authorizing $2 billion transfer from the savings account to a credit enhancement facility.
Only a representative can talk $2 billion at a time. Yes.
It's, you know, our water in Texas is this way, just very clearly. We got a supply of about 50 years that's going to be decreasing to 18% estimates. Mm-hmm. We've got a demand over the next 50 years going 27%. We need to develop additional water resources.
And there is nothing more important than water.
Water's life.
That is.
And so we put a $2 billion proposal on the table for a constitutional amendment for the voters to vote on, which basically moves $2 billion to an opportunity to leverage that with state and local dollars to where it's a $53 billion price tag over the next few years, $27 billion or so state, $23 billion or so federal. Local, and here's what I tell people. We lose as much water through leaky infrastructure on old municipal systems. This is going to give those smaller municipal systems opportunities to leverage some dollars to maybe shave a point or two off of some interest. It's something we needed to address. I'm proud of the state for stepping up and taking it on. Now our challenge is to make sure the money goes to water infrastructure.
Well, you know,
it needs to go into the ground. It can't be public service announcements and it can't be politicized. And there's already some evidence that that's kind of looking like it could happen. So we've got to get on top of that as a legislature and police that.
Sure. I'm looking forward to seeing how many people will vote for or in favor of that particular amendment, because I know of a one case that where they had a leaky faucet, one drop every 2 seconds or something like that, and their bill was something like $180, just one little drop. So imagine a leaky infrastructure system around the country, around the state.
It was time. That plan had been here since 1999, and it was time to put money where our mouth was and try to move us down that road. We've got plenty of water resources. Although they be expensive to develop, it's time to start trying to put them. They're never getting any cheaper.
For sure. We do not want to waste it.
We don't want to get out of water.
We've got Michael on the line, and good afternoon to you, Michael. Representative Perry here to take your question from me.
Hi. Two of my favorite folks. just wanted to a little bit follow up on a slightly different angle, since some of us are looking at charter changes. Is there any way locally, or do you know of any examples, I guess, Charles, where cities or citizens have had referendum or tried to change or override that Section 380 in the government code that, you know, kind of opened up the whole Pandora's box for the corporate welfare winner-loser thing that we're all very critical of. I know the sales tax thing and its angles, but that's not our whole problem.
Michael, I want to apologize to you, but we can barely hear your voice.
Breaking
up completely. So,
I'm sorry. No, I was saying that some of us are looking at ways to gain better control and limit the amount of money that goes.
All right, Michael, we got your question. We're going to go ahead and let you go, and Charles will answer your question because the connection is really bad.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
But thank you for your call, Michael. Go ahead, Charles.
Well, I think the code that you bespeak to, and I'm not just detailed familiar with it, but some of the economic development monies are running through there. There's been something discussed in a meeting that I was just at a week ago, and it was news to me and both the senator that was there. Senator Zelliker went in the same meeting with me, and they were proposing that to be able to change some of the eminent domain issues built into some of the government code for local officials, and use some of the 3B money on some of the economic development money to do some different things. Neither one of us seemed to support that on its face without a whole lot of work being done. But I would say, Michael, the answer to your question is the more involved, the more you guys show up, and you are a stalwart. You're an example we all should follow, that local politics is local, and you're there fighting the good battles and keeping taxpayer dollars. But you need to keep doing what you're doing. Call me off the mic on that issue. It's a pretty intense and pretty detailed code section if you've got some specifics in mind.
All righty. We're going to go to break, and we'll be right back. This is Isidro Gutierrez on the Did You Know show on KFYO, and this segment is what I'd like to call the Attitude of Gratitude segment. It's time to say thank you to my friend Mallory, thank you to Mike, and I want to say thank you to our representatives that serve our region in Austin, Senator Robert Duncan, of course, Representative Charles Perry, and Representative John Frullo. And Charles, who is that other West Texas representative that whose name escapes me right now?
Well, there's Drew Springer.
All right, thank you to Drew Springer.
Drew's awesome. Mm-hmm. I've learned to really appreciate Drew, but he's the real deal. He's to the east of us.
On behalf of all of West Texas, thank you, Charles, and all of these folks for what you tell us. The difference between being a representative and a senator. What's the big one?
About 700,000 people. I think 167,000 House district and around 800,000 and some change on the Senate district. About seven counties versus 50 for me. So there's a big territory geography to cover when you get into that.
Does a senator have more, is more effective in Austin than a representative, or is it the other way around?
No, I would say your senator probably, because of there's 31 of them and you only have to convince 19 or possibly 17, depending on kind of the issues of the day. But the process over there is made to be effective and efficient. So you can get a lot of stuff done. So Senate's a different world to operate in for sure, but you got 800,000 folks that you're responsible for, which is seems overwhelming, I would assume. And we're fortunate that Senator Duncan's done a really good job over 20 some odd years and sacrificed, made some of those things to happen that way. I want to get back to real quick. I don't like to think vouchers. I didn't fully explain everything there. I think vouchers will continue to be a discussion point for the legislature. I think it's appropriate to have those discussions, but where vouchers have been put in some places where the work wasn't done before they were implemented, it's been disastrous. California is a good place for that. Having the choices that we've got in this region already, I think it's made, we've done some good things at the legislature. HB 400 in the last session gave districts flexibility in getting rid of those teachers that may have lost their passion to teach kids. Maybe they needed to be moved on. So we were starting to address that. We put some things in with HB 1926 on charter schools to make them subject to the accountability. Part of the public school systems, they've got the resources, infrastructure, and everything already in place. It'd be a shame to just completely walk away from the funding aspect of that without making sure we've done everything as a legislature to make them successful. And then if we still get different results or results that we're not liking, then we need to consider other options. But today, I think Texas is moving in the right direction on fixing some of the things that have provided an environment of less outcomes than what we expected. And I think HB 5 did a lot for that on the curriculum. I think that the Charter School Accountability Act now CSCO and Common Core.
Yes. Now, I understand that Common Core is explicitly prohibited.
Explicitly prohibited through HB 462. For those that don't know it, that's a national agenda-sized education
program. Well, out here in West Texas, you're going to make a lot of people happy when you say that.
I'm happy with that. CSCO was placed under the State Board of Education for oversight and review, which I think it makes all the sense in the world, but that's still up in air. They're still trying to kind of fine tune what that means.
Now, Charles, I want to, for my own purpose, for my own edification, am I right in that C-Scope is about all the students in the same grade level at the same time in the same level at the same time?
There's three facets to C-Scope. Mm-hmm. It was a way to computerize the takes and the tax and all of the standards, if you will, that the state had done. It was a way to automate that so that there was a universal standard across the board.
Okay, now that is my number one objection to that.
Let me rephrase it. It wasn't standardizing the curriculum as much as it was it gave some certainty that the classroom material was subject to TEKS or TACS or meeting those standards was going to have some universal standard for schools to follow. Mm-hmm. So it was more of a mechanics. It was more of a mechanics than it was and it wasn't mandatory a lot of times, but where it got in trouble was some misguided lesson plans that were put out there and it evolved. But at the end of the day,
it was a one size fits all.
It was a one size fits all, but it was trying to bring kids up that move from district to district and not being at a disadvantage or an advantage. The intent was good.
Well, we're going to go for a break and we'll be back with our final segment in just a minute. This is Isidro Gutierrez with the Did You Know Show, and this is our final segment, and unfortunately it's very short, so I'm going to just say one thing here since it's such a short segment, and that is that when you see the name Charles Perry on your ballot, vote for Charles, all right? Just check it off. It's just when you see his name on that ballot. Charles, we got a couple of minutes. Tell the folks out there in West Texas what you want them to hear from you.
Well, real quick, in the state of Texas is blessed to have a lot of resources and a lot of good people trying to make the right decisions. But we still have some things to deal with, and specifically over the interim, I'm looking at those. We have some unfunded liabilities that we just kind of keep kicking the can and ignoring. So working on some unfunded liabilities, entitlement reforms, not just state of Texas. All states and federal government have to be looked at.
Well, if anybody can handle unfunded liabilities, Charles, we're going to put it in your.
We're going to start talking and working on it and get the problem to the table to be a part of. But the entitlement reforms has to be looked at. It's not servicing the way it was meant to do. It's keeping people in a system that's perpetually bad for them.
Oh, and now we have drug testing for welfare.
And we do have drug testing for welfare. Right. I had 3 pages of stuff, and we didn't get through a quarter of them. But,
no, it's 1 hour is too short.
I will tell you the constitutional ballot, HJR 24, it'll be number 4 on the ballot, is a veterans tax exemption for a 501c3 donated house. So West Texas Home Builders builds a house for a veteran, a disabled vet. Well, they're not going to be ran out of the house for not making the property taxes.
Yeah. We have to support that.
And I was proud to carry that, and it was a good bill that I got passed through. Election fraud, we did some things on. Transportation, you're going to get an option to vote on in 214. Pension reform on the TRS, that was one of those unfunded liabilities that we hit head on, did what we needed to do, got buy-in at both the teacher and individual level. So Texas is in a position to fix some long-term problems because we have some resources today. Making that a priority next session is going to be my goal.
That is a great statement, Brett. Texas is in a position right now, thanks to leadership, Charles, so where they can do something about these big issues, and that is wonderful.
Well, I thank you for having me on today, and we'll deal with specifics on some other issues. I apologize for anything that I didn't get answered.
The problem is that it's a one-hour show, and it just goes on way too quick. We have a caller on the line, but I don't think it would be fair to take the caller. Let's just say hello to him. Okay. Well, very good. We'll have those folks call back next week because it's just too short. I want to remind all of you listeners that we'll be back next Sunday, same time, same station, the Did You Know Show. And if you want to be a part of the show to express your opinion, you can call 770-5790.
And thank Ronnie for running the board.
Yeah, Ronnie, she's the lady who answered your phone calls. And so, anyway, we'll be back next Sunday. See you then.